Now that we're coming out of the pandemic, we don't have to be so cautious about getting or spreading the virus. It does seem really wise to ask ourselves, well, what have we learned? What do we want to let go of? What do we want to continue with? And what do we want to cultivate or deepen within ourselves? I know I want to continue living at this slower space. It allows me to take better care of myself. And also I get to savor those lovely, pleasurable moments when they arise much more, with much more awareness. And now that I can connect with the people that I love so dearly in the flesh, I want to give myself permission to express my love free from all shyness. And what I'd really like to cultivate in myself is the ability to remain stable and open-hearted when I encounter people with radically different views from mine. I like to not fall into my judging mind's aversive rant when I see people acting out of bizarre conspiracy theories, refusing to get vaccinated, denying climate change, institutionalized racism, misogyny, or any of the social and economic inequalities in our society. Getting caught in my own anger, fear, and despair really is so painful. It slams my heart shut. And then I can't find the wisdom I need to act in alignment with my values. And this is not how I want to live my life. But it's such a relief to be making it through the pandemic, isn't it? We have a new president and an administration that is sane, compassionate, and competent. I actually feel hope that our government could actually make some significant changes in the direction of greater equality and well-being. Yet we know there is great division and unrest. There are huge differences in views about how our society should be. Many who want to undermine democracy. There's more gun violence and increased hatred and violence towards those who aren't white, male, or Christian. Plus, we know that even though we all long for meaningful connection, so many of us feel disconnected, unheard, unseen, isolated, and lonely. As a society, our mental health is suffering severely. But for those of us who fervently believe in equality and peace and justice and love, all of this is excruciatingly painful and profoundly worrisome. So what are we to do? How do we relate to our fellow citizens and neighbors and colleagues and relatives when their views and actions are so different from ours? How can we not get pulled into the duality of us versus them and the judging mind's declaration that they are simply wrong, stupid, or unawake? How do we not deepen the disconnection between us and delude ourselves by thinking we can stay safe hiding in our own little bubbles? Obviously, this is a huge and complex question, but I'd like to delve into it a bit by exploring what is meant in Buddhism as wise view. Perhaps this will give us some helpful insight for practice. It really does feel like we're in a transformative time. So many powerful forces are at play. If we want things to go in the direction of well-being and equality, then these are the times for clear, intelligent action. The term wise view is the first of the two wisdom factors in the Buddha's teaching of the Noble Eightfold Path to liberation from suffering. The other wisdom factor is wise intention. And then wise speech, action, and livelihood are the three ethical factors, and wise effort, mindfulness and concentration are the three meditative practices. When the Buddha defined views as wise, he wasn't presenting a dogmatic way of looking at the world, but rather was pointing out that certain views are integral to freedom from suffering. All eight factors of this middle way are interrelated and affect each other, but wise view is considered the foundation for all the others. Essentially, wise view is the understanding and clear seeing of reality. It's perceiving our world as it actually is. This includes understanding the three marks of existence. One, the reality of impermanence. Two, that there is suffering in being alive. And three, that nothing actually exists independently or separately. Or putting this all really simply, nothing is permanent, perfect, or personal. Impermanence is pretty obvious and easy to understand, although we don't always appreciate this law of nature when we're loving our experience of the moment and we don't want it to change. And perhaps during this long period of pandemic-induced isolation, your daily experiences seemed pretty Groundhog Day-ish. Mine sure did. Very little seemed to change day after day after day. But now, thankfully, we have more variety to our days. It kind of feels like coming alive after being contained and subdued for so long. It's a refreshing relief. Likewise, that suffering, dukkha, or unsatisfactoriness as part of being alive is also pretty obvious. Living in these bodies that are subject to aging, illness, and death, we do and will experience pain. We know pain is part of being alive. And over this year, so many have suffered the terrible misery of being infected with the virus, and so many have died. I read that 1 in 5 Americans have lost a relative or friend to COVID-19. This is huge suffering. And these tragic losses will be felt by so many, perhaps for the rest of their lives. But this third mark of existence, that nothing actually exists independently, but rather all of life is interdependent, the reality of what is called no self, is much more difficult to understand. Yet it's key to freedom from suffering, and I think it's vital for finding wise action in these precarious times. Of course, the reality of no self doesn't mean that you and I don't exist. Clearly, we're all here and very much alive. It just means that there is no permanent, independently existing, unchanging self. There is no me that exists separately or is untouched, unaffected from everything and everyone else. Instead, everything exists in relationship to everything else. Each of us are all in process, all changing. And since everything is connected, essentially, we are all one. We belong to each other and to every aspect of life. There's an ancient metaphor for this view that imagines the structure of the universe as a limitless web of connections. It's called Indra's net. Perhaps you're familiar with this metaphor. Imagine a vast net that stretches infinitely in all directions, and in each eye or intersection of the net is a single brilliant jewel. Each jewel is perfectly clear and reflects all the other jewels in the net, the way two mirrors placed opposite each other reflect an image ad infinitum. The jewel in this metaphor stands for a cell, an atom, or an individual consciousness. Every jewel is intimately connected with all the other jewels in the net. And a change in one jewel means a change, however slight, in every other jewel. Each jewel then reflects the qualities of all the other jewels. This displays the interconnectedness and interdependency of everything in the universe and infers the reality of no self, the lack of a solid, an unchanging inherent self. There is an infinite number of causes and conditions coming together that creates each moment of our experience. The you that you are right now exists because of your parents and their lineage, your conditioning, and thousands of encounters, traumas, and experiences over your entire life that somehow led you to wanting to awaken, learn meditation, and finally to be here on this retreat. We all exist due to this complex web of connections constantly influencing each other every moment. When we make the time to slow down and become quiet, as we do in meditation, we can more easily see the web of connections between all of us. We see that each aspect of our present reality arises from a vast set of conditions that come together and come apart at every moment. We see constant change and lack of solidity. Everything is shifting and fluid, and most of it is out of our control. Instead of fruitlessly trying to control what can't be controlled, we can connect deeply to things as they are in this moment. Being mindfully connected to our own experiences, excluding no aspect of it, reveals our connectedness to all things and all beings. We aren't standing apart from anything or anyone. We aren't alone in our suffering or our joy, because all of life is a mixture of conditions of influences coming together and coming apart. Another way to understand this aspect of wise view is through the teachings of the Two Truths Doctrine, which describes two realities we live in every moment: relative reality and ultimate reality. In relative reality, we are bodies living on this physical realm, growing older day by day. Our minds are run by our ego-driven habits, and we relate to life primarily through concepts and ideas. In relative reality, I am a white woman, mother, grandmother, lesbian, wife, teacher, psychotherapist, bicyclist, and at some point, I will die. In ultimate reality, I am none of these things. I am without body, formless, empty of self, and eternal. I am awareness interacting with the karmic rhythms of life, undivided and beyond conception. In ultimate reality, there is no separation, no gender, no race, no class, no ethnicity, nor any reason to suffer. We are simply all connected and all one. While language and concepts are necessary for navigating relative reality, ultimate reality is what we aspire to in spiritual practice, a felt sense of universal belonging, harmony, and boundlessness that is beyond the limits of concept. We can think of ultimate reality and relative reality as two sides of the same coin, actually. Ultimate reality is like the ocean, and relative reality is the wave. Or we could say ultimate reality is like the open, clear blue sky, and relative reality is all that appears and disappears in the sky. Relative reality makes knowing the ultimate possible, and we can't know ultimate reality outside of our bodily experiences. It's hard to perceive this dual view of reality because conditioning biases and distorts the mind's perception of reality. And primary among the distortions is attachment to the dualistic view of self and other. As Einstein once said, we suffer from a kind of optical delusion of consciousness and experience our thoughts and feelings as something separated from the whole. We habitually perceive ourselves, therefore, as separate from each other. And when we perceive the separate other as a threat, for example, we judge that those people are crazy, wrong, or redneck and must be avoided. We automatically close our heart out of fear and deepen the deluded disconnection. Cultivating wise view, then, involves remembering that ultimately we are all connected and not separate. It also involves dissolving the distortions of who we take ourselves to be, our conditioned self-identity. As women, we tend to internalize the misogynistic view inherent in patriarchy that we are less important, less intelligent, less powerful, less worthy. Many of us develop the view that we're damaged goods and believe something is really the matter with us. We often believe we're not enough, and that sometimes, along with that, we also believe we're too much, too sensitive, too emotional, too, you fill in the blank. As long as we're aligned with this conditioned view, we'll automatically shrink, give our power away, and be tossed around by feeling insecure and anxious, depressed, or angry. But if we align with the wise view that beyond the habits of conditioning is the ultimate reality of our true nature, our Buddha nature, which is wise, stable, vast, luminous, compassionate, intelligent, then we can find our agency. We can remember that we are not the habits of our conditioning and their underlying beliefs. And since we're all part of Indra's net, what we think, feel, say, and do actually does matter. It always affects others. Understanding this can empower us to take responsibility for our experience and respond appropriately, wisely, and skillfully. The reality of interdependence is really easy to see on the physical realm. The declining health of our planet's culture and the rapid spread of the coronavirus across the world blatantly demonstrates it. Likewise, when we contemplate any object more deeply, be it the food we just ate for lunch, the computer that we're using right now, or any object in nature, we can recognize the elements that bring it into form. If we look more closely into what we call a tree, for example, we can see that a tree is not a singular entity. It doesn't have an independently existing self that suddenly pops into existence. Instead, we know it arises from a set of elements and forces all connecting and in process. First, the seed was planted, and then the quality of the soil, air, sunlight, water, and wind over time affects its growth, shape, and health. Forester Suzanne Simard, in her recent book, Finding the Mother Tree, Discovering the Wisdom of the Forest, tells us she has discovered that trees have an incredibly complex network of interconnectedness as well. Her work reveals that forests are social, cooperative creatures connected through amazing and intricate underground networks by which they communicate their vitality and vulnerabilities with each other. So interconnectedness, like impermanence, is a law of nature. Instead of being separate, we all inter-are, as Thich Nhat Hanh states it. We are dependent on each other. We need each other. We continuously influence each other, and we therefore have tremendous vulnerability with each other. Each of us in every moment has a potential to affect others positively or negatively. We can harm and hurt each other, or love and help each other. We know we do both, and the effects of our actions ripple out indefinitely. Because of this reality, our own liberation from suffering is intertwined with the liberation of others. Rather than seeing others as adversaries or enemies, we're wise to see them as companions or partners in the pursuit of our mutual freedom. Instead of viewing others with fear or contempt, we can see them as part of who we ourselves are. Knowing this, we can relate to all beings without exception as worthy and precious. We can remember that every single being truly matters because we're all part of Indra's net. We all belong to each other. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. understood and spoke of this when he said, quote, "All of life is interrelated, and we are all caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. I can never be what I ought to be until you are what you ought to be. And you can never be what you ought to be till I am what I ought to be. This is the interrelated structure of reality." We know we are essentially no different from each other, no matter who we are. We all share the same desire for happiness, to love and be loved, to belong, to be safe, to follow our dreams, and to be our true authentic selves. And we all suffer. We all know what it's like to get hurt, to be treated violently or meanly, to feel anxious, lonely, to experience loss and grief, and to have the body become sick, injured, and grow older. As women, we know the pain of what it's like to be oppressed, shushed, ignored, and be viewed as not mattering. The Buddha said, "All beings everywhere experience suffering, and all beings everywhere want to be happy. It's only due to ignorance created by our conditioning that we create suffering for ourselves and for others." Understanding that we all want to be happy and that suffering hurts others in the same way it hurts us is the root of empathy. Mindfulness practice helps us accept and understand our feelings and work with them skillfully. We know that when we're caught in strong anger or hatred or aversion, it's a state of pain and isolation. Instead of judging the anger or condemning ourselves for feeling it, we can feel compassion for ourselves because this state is so painful. Knowing this, we then understand that when others are caught in anger, they're hurting in the same way we are when we're lost in it. Empathy and non-separation are the most fundamental aspects of compassion and loving kindness. Empathy allows us to imagine the pain the other feels. When we inscribe that person's suffering into our body, heart, and mind as if it were our own, it's a radical clear seeing of our non-separateness. But when others are seen as objects, as not fully human, as limited, as wrong, stupid, or not mattering as much, then it's quite easy to hurt them. We know all too well that whole societies can be taught to deaden feeling and disassociate from their minority and marginal members, thereby erasing their humanity. This makes it easy to inflict harm on them without flinching. But by understanding we're all connected and knowing from within the pain others would experience from our unskillful actions, then a clear sense of morality arises. We learn not to hurt others because we understand how it feels to be hurt. So when we witness someone behaving in a harmful way, spewing harsh words, or acting divisively, if we take the time to pause and breathe, slow down, and realize all the different forces coming together in one action, perhaps we will understand that person's actions and remember their desire for happiness, even in the midst of their hurtful behavior. A woman in a practice class recently lamented over her brother-in-law's extremely right-wing views, his ranting at our new president, and his desire to get richer and richer, no matter how it affected anyone else. At first, she felt appalled by his views and behaviors. Her judging mind was offended by his selfishness, and she found it very difficult to find any connection, let alone feel compassion and loving kindness for him. But when she took this painful situation into her meditation and went under the surface story, she realized that he was feeling vulnerable and deeply afraid, worried about his family's financial future, which he felt total responsibility for, and that he also lacked the spiritual tools to create his own inner steadiness with the changing external conditions over which he had very little control. She recalled times in her own life when she had also felt insecure, afraid, and responsible for her family. Once understanding this, she could sense his fear and pain and could open her heart to him again. When she next had contact with him, she found that she could relate to him from a stable, loving place, staying connected to her own values while keeping her heart open. She is hopeful this will enable her to express her different views, if he's willing and open at some point, to hear her perspective. Bearing in mind, then, the fact of our interconnectedness, when we see others behaving in ways that create division and hatred, and we react with our own anger, fear, or hopelessness, here are some suggestions for practice to help us find our way back to our open heart, to our wisdom, and to skillful action. First, always we need to recognize what's happening for us. This is fundamental. We have no ability to respond differently until we wake up to our own direct experience, right? So we mindfully turn towards our experience and softly note it. Here's feeling outraged right now. Here's feeling so mad I'd like to strangle him. Or here's feeling so sad and discouraged I want to give up on the human race. We need to honestly recognize and accept our present moment experience, first and foremost. Then, as the great Buddhist sage from the 8th century, Shantideva, recommended, we need to, quote, remain like a log of wood, end quote. That's right. We need to remain like a log of wood. In other words, we need to refrain from acting or speaking in order to interrupt the momentum of our reactions and avoid escalating the situation. This also creates the space to turn toward our experience and investigate it a bit. We observe our rant or sadness, breathe, spot the exact story the mind is spinning, and open to the actual energy and sensations this is creating in the body. As we practice remaining like a log of wood, mindfully accepting whatever we notice, we're creating the inner space where we are more likely to remember that we're all one, connected, part of Indra's net. Keeping this truth as the North Star on our ethical compass then allows room for feeling empathy and compassion. We'll likely remember that this person, just like me, gets caught up in fear, anger, and confusion at times, and just like me, wants to be happy, safe, and loved. Perhaps this person feels vulnerable and powerless and is acting out of their conditioning, just as I do at times. We might feel compassion for the pain that we're feeling right now, too. Out of this mindful exploration, it's quite likely that whatever skillful action we might take will become clear to us. But a word of caution here, as feminist and activist Rebecca Solnit reminds us. As women, we've been trained in patriarchy to comply, cooperate, yield, and of course, be empathetic. But sometimes we're understanding to the point where we tolerate unskillful behavior because we know where it's coming from. We see the depths of the behavior, but we ignore the surface. We see the causes, but don't notice the effect. It's vital that we take a strong stand against harmful behavior whenever we can, and we can learn to do so without disconnecting from our wise heart and from that person. This is practicing fierce compassion and loving kindness based on clear seeing. We can learn to express disagreement or set a boundary without feeling aversion or the need to rationalize or apologize. Remembering our interconnection, we can speak our truth from our open heart. And then even if that person doesn't respond immediately as we'd hope, we can trust that our actions will have some impact, some way, somehow, someday. Of course, we don't know what's going to happen and how all these forces at play in our world will shift and change. But there is possibility in this uncertainty, and it's really important to have hope, wise hope, hope that is grounded in possibility. Hope involves embracing the essential unknowability of the world. So if we stay aligned with interconnectedness as our North Star, honoring the fact that we affect each other all the time, and if we take responsibility for ourselves and do our best to act from a loving, wise, and compassionate heart, then we're doing our best. We're doing all we can to help us resolve and evolve to a more inclusive and just world. As we practice this, though, we also need to hold a long view so we can sustain our efforts over time and not give up. In a recent interview with Gloria Steinem, she was asked about her sense of the progress we've made in gender equality and how she keeps her spirits up, given how slow progress has been. I was surprised to hear her say that she actually feels we've made a lot of progress. Given we lived under patriarchy for over 5,000 years, she said, the changes we've made in the last 100, and especially the last 50 years, are truly remarkable. She said she keeps her spirits up through deep connections with her dearest friends, and when she feels really discouraged, she goes to Central Park, leans against her favorite granite rock, feels its ancientness, and then reflects on the countless many who have been steadily working towards justice and equality over all this time. This inspires her to keep at it. It seems clear that as we're coming out of this pandemic, now is the time to re-envision our world. A lot of people seem to be moving away from the status quo that didn't serve them and are finding new ways to live. So given we're all part of this transformation, let's ask ourselves how we want to live our lives now and do our best to manifest that. And when we realize that we're all riled up, hooked by someone's divisive view or unskillful behavior, let's pause, breathe, and remain like a log of wood so we can create the inner space we need to find a skillful response. Let's hold ultimate and relative reality in mind and remember that we are both the ocean and the wave. We are boundless and we are form. Let's notice and embrace the tenderness that naturally arises when we remember that we do belong to each other. And that tenderness, grounded in empathy and compassion, can manifest as a fierce showing up for one another, grounded in the knowledge of how deeply our lives are actually intertwined. When we let go of the divisiveness of self versus other, and see instead this vast web of interconnectedness, holding the inclusive view of we and us, then love and connection, kindness and compassion have the space to arise as reflections of the mind's natural state. Let's open our hearts to each other, no matter how different we appear on the surface, as we remain steadfast in our commitment to peace, equality, and freedom. This is practicing wise view and the essence of loving kindness and compassion. Let's be loving, wise, and powerful. I'd like to end with this piece from Mary Oliver. I would like to say that there exists 1,000 unbreakable links between each of us and everything else, and that our dignity and our chances are one. The farthest star and the mud at our feet are a family, and there is no decency or sense in honoring one thing or a few things and then losing the list. The pine tree, the leopard, the Platte River, and ourselves, we are at risk together, or we are on our way to a sustainable world together. We are each other's destiny. Let's sit together for a moment.